grinned at the memory of her special smile, the one she gave no one but him. He missed Kalin more than he could ever miss his woods. He wanted to get to her as fast as he could. Soon he would, but first he had a few things to do in Aidendrill. At the sound of shouting, he looked up and realized that in his daydreaming, he hadn't been paying any attention to where he was going, and a column of soldiers was about to trample him. The commander cursed as he drew his men to a sudden halt.
"Do you be blind? What kind of fool walks under a column of horsemen?"
Richard glanced around. The people had all moved away from the soldiers and seemed to be trying their best to look as if they had never had any intention of venturing anywhere near the center of the street. They worked at pretending the soldiers didn't exist. Most looked as if they wanted to become invisible. Richard peered up at the man who had yelled at him, and briefly gave thought to becoming invisible himself before there was trouble and someone was hurt. But the wizard's second rule came to mind. The greatest harm can result from the best intentions. He had learned that when you mixed in magic, the results could be disastrous. Magic was dangerous and had to be used carefully. He quickly decided that a simple apology would be prudent and would work best. "Sorry, I guess I wasn't looking where I was going. Forgive me." He didn't recall having ever seen soldiers like these, all atop mounts standing in neat, precise rows. Each grim-faced soldier's armor was blinding in the sunlight. Besides the impeccably polished armor, their swords, knives, and lances glinted in the sunlight. Each man wore a crimson cape draped in exact fashion over the flank of his white horse. They looked to Richard like men about to pass in review before a great king. The man who had yelled glared down from under the brim of a gleaming helmet topped with a red horsehair plume. He held the reins to his powerful gray gelding easily in one gauntleted hand as he leaned over.
"Get out of our way, half-wit, or we'll trample you and be done with it."
Richard recognized the man's accent. It was the same as Addie's. He didn't know what land Addie was from, but these men had to be from the same place. Richard shrugged as he took a step back.
"I said I was sorry. I didn't know there was such urgent business about." "Fighting the Keeper always be urgent business."
Richard took another step back.
"Can't argue with you about that. I'm sure he's shivering in a corner right now, waiting for you to come vanquish him, so you best be on with it, then."
The man's dark eyes shone like ice. Richard tried not to let his wince show. He wished he could learn not to be flip. He guessed it was a result of his size. Richard had never liked fighting. As he had grown, he had become the target of others wanting to prove themselves. Before, he had been given the sword of truth, and it had taught him the need of sometimes releasing the anger he had always kept under tight control. He had learned that he could use a smile and humor to smooth the feelings of agitated foes, and disarm those simply wanting to start a fight. Richard knew his own strength, but that confidence had lent his easy humor a tendency to become flippant. Sometimes it seemed as if he just couldn't help himself. His mouth simply moved before he thought.
"You have a bold tongue. Maybe you be one beguiled by the Keeper."
"I assure you, sir, you and I fight the same foe.
The Keeper's minions lurk behind arrogance."
Just as Richard was thinking that he didn't need any trouble, and it was time to make a quick retreat, the man made to dismount. At the same instant, powerful hands grabbed him. Two huge men, one at each shoulder, lifted him from his feet.
"On your way, dandy,"
the one at his right shoulder said to the horseman.
"This one is none of your concern."
Richard tried to twist his head around, but he could only manage to see the brown leather of Dharan uniforms on the men who held him from behind. The soldier froze with his foot just out of the stirrup.
"We be on the same side, brother. This one needs to be questioned by us, and then to learn some humility. We will—"
"I said be off!"
Richard opened his mouth to say something. Immediately, the heavily muscled arm of the Dharan at his right came out from under a thick, dark brown wool cape. As a massive hand clamped over his mouth, Richard saw a band of gold-colored metal just above the elbow, its razor-sharp projections glinting in the sunlight. The bands were deadly weapons used to rip open an opponent in close combat. Richard nearly choked on his own tongue. Most Dharan soldiers were big, but these two were well beyond merely big. Worse, they were not simply regular Dharan soldiers. Richard had seen men like these before, with bands just above their elbows. They were Darkin Rall's personal guards. Darkin Rall almost always had two men like these with him. The two men lifted Richard easily in their fists. He was as helpless as a stick doll. In his two-week race to Aidendrill to get to Kalin, he had not only had little food but little sleep. The fight with the Mariswith only hours before had drained nearly all the energy he had left, but his fright brought a reserve of strength to his muscles. Against these two, it was not enough. The man on the horse started swinging his leg over its flanks again to dismount.
"I told you, this one be ours. We intend to question him. If he serves the Keeper, he will confess."
The Daharan at Richard's left shoulder growled in a menacing voice.
Come down here and I'll lop off your head and use it to play a game of bowls. We've been looking for this one and he's ours now. When we're done with him, you can question his corpse all you want.
Frozen half off his horse, the man glared down at the Daharans.
I told you, brother, we be on the same side. We both fight the Keeper's evil. There be no need for us to fight one another.
If you want to argue, then do it with your sword. If not, be off. The near to 200 horsemen watched the two Daharans, showing no emotion, especially not fear. There were, after all, only two Daharans, not an arduous challenge despite the men's size. At least a fool might think so. Richard had seen Daharan troops everywhere in the city. It was possible that at the first sign of trouble, they could show up in short order. The horsemen didn't seem too concerned about other Daharans, though.
There be only two of you, brother. Not good odds.
The one at Richard's left glanced casually down the line of horsemen, turned his head and spat.
You're right, Dandy. Egan here will stand aside to make the odds more even, while I deal with you and your fancy men. But be sure of yourself, brother, 'cause if your foot touches the ground, by my word, you die first.
Eyes of ice, still and cold, appraised the two a moment. Then the man in the polished armor and crimson cape, grumbling a curse in a foreign tongue, let his weight drop back down in his saddle.
We have important matters that demand our attention. This one be a waste of our time, he be yours.
With a wave of his arm, the column of horsemen charged up the street, narrowly missing trampling Richard and his two captors. Richard tried, but the two holding him were too strong, and he couldn't get his hand to his sword as they carried him off. He scanned the rooftops but saw nothing. All the people around averted their eyes, wanting nothing to do with the trouble at hand. As the two huge Daharans dragged Richard from the center of the street, people scattered out of the way as if they had eyes in the back of their heads. Over the noise of the city, his muffled, angry cries were lost. Try as he might, he couldn't get a hand near a weapon. His boots skimmed across the snow, his feet working in vain for purchase. Richard struggled, but before he had time to try to think what to do next, they pulled him into a narrow, dark passageway between an inn and another shuttered building. Deep in the passageway, in the murky shadows, four dark, cloaked figures waited. Chapter 8 Gently, the two huge Daharans set Richard down. As his feet found the ground, his hand found the hilt of his sword. The two men spread their feet in a relaxed manner and clasped their hands behind their backs. From the shadowed end of the passageway, the four cloaked figures started toward him. Deciding escape was preferable to a fight, Richard didn't draw his sword but instead dove to the side. He rolled through the snow and sprang to his feet, his back smacked up against the cold brick wall. Panting, he flung his wrist-width cape around himself. In a heartbeat, the cape changed color to match the wall and he vanished. It would be an easy matter to slip away while hidden by the cape. Better to escape than to fight, as soon as he caught his breath. The four marched forward, their dark capes billowing open as they came into the light. Dark brown leather, the same color as the Daharans' uniforms, covered their shapely forms from ground to neck. A yellow star between the cusps of a crescent emblazoned the leather outfits at each woman's stomach. The recognition of that yellow star and crescent was like a flash of lightning in Richard's mind. Too many times to count, his face, wet with his own blood, had laid against that emblem. Out of reflex he froze, drawing neither sword nor breath. For a panic-filled instant, he saw only the symbol he knew all too well. Mordsith. The woman in the lead pushed back her hood, letting her long blonde hair, plaited in a single thick braid, fall free. Her blue eyes searched the wall where he stood.
Lord Rawl? Lord Rawl, where?
Richard blinked.
Kara?
Just as he slackened his concentration, allowing his cape to return to black and her eyes found him, the sky fell in. With a roar, a flap of wings and a flash of fangs, Gratch plummeted to the ground. The two men had swords to hand almost instantly, but they were not as fast as the Mordsith. Before the men's blades had cleared their scabbards, the women had their Ajeel in their fists. Though an Ajeel appeared to be nothing more than a thin red leather rod, Richard knew them to be weapons of awesome power. Richard had been trained with an Ajeel. Richard heaved himself at the gar, knocking him to the far wall before the two men and four women could reach him. Gratch slung him aside in his desire to get at the threat.
Stop! All of you, stop!
Six people and one gar froze at the sound of his shriek. Richard didn't know who would win the fight, but he didn't want to find out. He snatched the instant he had before they might decide to move again and sprang in front of Gratch. With his back to the gar, he held his hands out to each side. Gratch is my friend. He only wants to protect me. Stay where you are, and he won't hurt you. Gratch's furry arm circled around Richard's middle and drew him back against the taut, pink skin of his chest and stomach. The passageway resounded with a growl that, while affectionate, at the same time carried a rumble of threat for the others. Lord Rawl, Kara said in a smooth voice as the two men sheathed their swords.
We are here to protect you, too.
Richard eased the arm away.
It's all right, Gratch. I know them. You did good, just like I asked, but it's all right now. Just calm down.
Gratch let out a purling rumble that echoed off the walls, rising up like a narrow, dark canyon. Richard knew it as a sound of satisfaction. He had told Gratch to follow him, either high in the air or flying from rooftop to rooftop, but to stay out of sight unless there was trouble. Gratch had indeed done a good job. Richard hadn't seen a sign of him until he dropped down on them.
Kara, what are you doing here?
Kara reverently touched his arm, seeming surprised at finding it solid. She jabbed a finger at his shoulder and then broke into a grin.
Not even Darkin Rawl himself could become invisible. He could command beasts, but he could not become invisible.
I don't command Gratch, he's my friend. And I don't exactly become... Kara, what are you doing here? She looked perplexed at the question.
Protecting you.
Richard pointed at the two men.
And them? They said they were going to kill me.
The two men stood rooted like twin oaks.
Lord Rawl, said one, we would die before we let harm touch you.
We had almost caught up with you when you walked into those fancy horsemen, Kara said. I told Egan and Ulick to get you out of there without any fighting or you could be hurt. If those men thought we were trying to rescue you, they might have tried to kill you. We didn't want to take a chance with your life.
Richard glanced to the two great blonde-headed men. The dark leather straps, plates, and belts of their uniforms were molded to fit like a second skin over the prominent contours of their muscles. Incised in the leather at the center of their chests was an ornate letter R, and beneath that two crossed swords. One of them, Richard wasn't sure if it was Egan or Ulick, echoed the truth of what Kara had said. Since Kara and the other Mord Sith had helped him in Dahara 2 weeks before, making it possible for him to defeat Darkin Rawl, he was inclined to believe her. Richard hadn't anticipated their choice when he had declared the Mord Sith free from the shackles of their discipline. Having their freedom, they chose to be his guardians, and were fiercely protective of him. There didn't seem to be anything he could do to change their minds. One of the other women spoke Kara's name in caution and nodded toward the opening into the street. People slowed as they passed, peering in, looking them over. A glare from the two men as they turned put speed into the onlooker's steps and turned their eyes away. Kara grasped Richard's arm above the elbow.
It isn't safe here, yet. Come with us, Lord Rawl.
Not waiting for his answer or cooperation, she pulled him into the shadows at the back of the passageway. Richard gestured silently to reassure Gratch. Lifting the bottom of a loose shutter, Kara stuffed him ahead of her through the opening. The window they entered was the only one in a room appointed with a dusty table holding three candles, several benches, and one chair. To the side sat a pile of their gear. Gratch managed to fold his wings and squeeze through, too. He stood close to Richard, quietly watching the others. They, in turn, having been told that he was Richard's friend, didn't seem concerned at having a hulking Gar eyeing them from a few feet away.
Kara, what are you doing here?
She frowned as if he were thick.
I told you we came to protect you.
A mischievous smile crooked the corners of her mouth.
Seems we arrived just in time. Master Rawl must devote himself to being the magic against magic, a task you are more suited to, and let us be the steel against steel.
She held her hand out to the other three women.
We didn't have time for introductions at the palace. These are my sisters of the Ajeel, Haley, Burdeen, and Reyna.
In the flickering candlelight, Richard studied the three faces. He had been in a terrible rush at the time and recalled only Kara. She was the one who had spoken for them, and he had held a knife to her throat until she convinced him she was telling the truth. Like Kara, Haley was blonde, blue-eyed, and tall. Burdeen and Reyna were a bit shorter, blue-eyed Burdeen with a loose braid of wavy brown hair, and Reyna with dark hair and eyes that seemed to be examining his soul for every nuance of strength, weakness, and character. An idiosyncratic, piercing scrutiny unique to Mord Sith. Somehow, Reyna's dark eyes made the penetrating judgment seem more incisive. Richard didn't shy from their gazes.
You were among those who saw me safely through the palace?
They nodded.
Then you have my eternal gratitude. What of the others?
The others remained at the palace in case you returned before we found you, Kara said. Commander General Trimac insisted Ulik and Egan would come too, since they are among personal bodyguards to the Master Rall. We left within an hour after you did, trying to catch you. She shook her head in wonder. We wasted no time, and you gained almost a day on us. Richard tugged straight the baldric holding his sword. I was in a hurry. Kara shrugged. You are the Master Rall. Nothing you do could surprise us. Richard thought she had looked very surprised indeed when she saw him become invisible, but he didn't say it, in view of his newfound restraint on his flip tongue. He glanced around at the dimly lit, dusty room. What are you doing in this place? Kara pulled off her gloves and tossed them on the table. We intended to use it as a base while we looked for you. We've only been here a short time. We chose this spot because it's close to the Dharan headquarters. I was told they're in a large building beyond the market. They are, Haley said. We checked. Richard searched her piercing blue eyes. I was on my way there when you found me. I guess it wouldn't hurt to have you along. He loosened the wrist-width cape at his throat and scratched the back of his neck. How did you manage to find me in a city of this size? The two men stood without showing emotion, but eyebrows went up on the women. You are Master Rall, Kara said, seeming to think that would be explanation enough. Richard planted his fists on his hips. So? The bond, Verdine said. She looked perplexed at the blank expression on his face. We are bonded to the Master Rall. I don't understand what that means. What does it have to do with finding me? Looks passed among the women. Kara cocked her head to the side. You are Lord Rall, the master of Dahara. We are Daharans. How can you not understand? Richard wiped his hair back off his forehead as he let out an exasperated breath. I was raised in Westland, two boundaries away from Dahara. I never knew anything about Dahara, much less Darkin Rall, until the boundaries came down. I didn't even know Darkin Rall was my father until just a few months ago. He glanced away from their bewildered expressions. He raped my mother, and she fled to Westland before I was born, before the boundaries went up. Darkin Rall never knew I existed, or that I was his son until he died. I don't know anything about being Master Rall. The two men stood as they had, showing no emotion. The four Mord Sith stared at him a long moment, the candle flame adding a point of light to the corner of their eyes as they seemed to study his soul again. He wondered if they were regretting their oath of loyalty to him. Richard felt awkward laying out his ancestry to the scrutiny of people he didn't really know. You still haven't explained how you managed to find me. As Berdine took off her cape and tossed it atop their gear, Kara laid a hand on his shoulder, urging him to sit in a chair. By the way its loose joints swayed under his weight, he wasn't sure it would hold him, but it did. She glanced up at the two men. Maybe you could better explain the bond to him, since you feel it most strongly. Ulik? Ulik shifted his weight. Where should I begin? Kara started to say something, but Richard cut her off. I have important things to do, and I don't have a great deal of time. Just tell me the important parts. Tell me about this bond. Ulik nodded. I will tell you as we are taught. Richard gestured toward a bench, indicating he wanted Ulik to sit. It made him uncomfortable having the man tower over him like some mountain with arms. Checking over his shoulder, Richard saw that Gratch was contentedly licking his fur, but keeping his glowing green eyes on the people. Richard smiled reassuringly. Gratch hadn't been around that many people, and Richard wanted him to be comfortable in view of what he planned. The guard's face wrinkled into a smile, but his ears were perked as he listened. Richard wished he knew for sure how much Gratch could understand. Ulik pulled up a bench and sat. Long ago. How long? Richard interrupted. Ulik rubbed a thumb along the bone handle of the knife at his belt as he contemplated the question. His deep voice seemed as if it might smother the candle flames. Long ago, in the beginning times of Dahara, I believe several thousand years ago. So what took place in these beginning times? Well, that was where the bond originated. In the beginning times, the first Master Rall cast his power, his magic, over the Daharan people, in order to protect us. Richard lifted an eyebrow. You mean in order to rule you? Ulik shook his head. It was a covenant. The House of Rall. He tapped the ornate letter R, incised in the leather over his chest. Would be the magic, and the Daharan people would be the steel. We protect him, and he in turn protects us. We were bonded. Why would a wizard need the protection of steel? Wizards have magic. Ulik's leather uniform creaked as he put an elbow to his knee and leaned in with a sobering expression.
You have magic. Has it always protected you? You cannot always remain awake or always see who is behind you, or conjure magic fast enough if the numbers are great. Even those with magic will die if someone slits their throat. You need us. Richard conceded the point.
So, what does this bond have to do with me?
Well, the covenant, the magic, links the people of Dahara to the Master Rawl. When the Master Rawl dies, the bond can be passed on to his gifted heir.
Ulick shrugged.
The bond is the magic of that link. All Daharans feel it. We understand it from birth. We recognize the Master Rawl by the bond. When the Master Rawl is near, we can feel his presence. That's how we found you. When we're close enough, we can sense you.
Richard gripped the arms of the chair as he leaned forward.
You mean to tell me that all Daharans can sense me and know where I am? No, there's more to it.
Ulick stuffed a finger under a leather plate to scratch his shoulder while he tried to think of how to explain.
Berdine put a foot on the bench beside Ulick and leaned forward on an elbow, coming to his rescue. Her thick brown braid fell forward over her shoulder.
You see, first of all, we must recognize the new Master Rawl. By that I mean we must recognize and accept his rule in a formal manner. This acquiescence is not formal in the sense of ceremony, but more in the sense of an understanding and acceptance within our hearts. It does not have to be an acceptance we desire, and in the past, with us anyway, it was not. But acceptance is implicit, nonetheless.
You mean you must believe?
All the faces staring at him brightened.
Yes, that's a good way to express it, Egan put in. Once we acquiesce to his dominion, and as long as the Master Rawl lives, we are bonded to him. When he dies, the new Lord Rawl takes his place, and we are then bonded to him. At least, that's the way it's supposed to work. This time, something went wrong, and Darkon Rawl, or his spirit, somehow maintained a part of himself in this world.
Richard straightened in his chair.
The gateway. The boxes in the Garden of Life are a gateway to the underworld, and one was left opened. When I came back 2 weeks ago, I closed it, sending Darkon Rawl back to the underworld for good.
Ulick's muscles bulked as he rubbed his palms together.
When Darkon Rawl died at the beginning of winter and you spoke outside the palace, many of the Daharans there believed you were the new Lord Rawl. Some did not. Some still held on to their loyalty, their bond, to Darkon Rawl. It must have been because of this gateway you said was opened. It's never happened that way before, that I heard of, anyway. When you returned to the palace and defeated Darkon Rawl's spirit with the use of your gift, you also defeated the rebel officers who denounced you. In banishing Darkon Rawl's spirit, you broke the bond he still held over some of them, and convinced the rest at the palace of your authority as Master Rawl. They are loyal now, the whole palace is. They are all bonded to you.
As it should be, Rayna said with finality. You have the gift. You are a wizard. You are the magic against magic. And the Daharans, your people, are the steel against steel.
Richard looked up into her dark eyes.
I know less about this bond, this steel against steel and magic against magic business, than I know about being a wizard. And I know next to nothing about being a wizard. I don't know how to use magic.
The women stared for a moment, and then laughed as if he had made a joke and they wanted him to think they were amused.
I'm not joking. I don't know how to use my gift.
Haley clapped him on the back of his shoulder and pointed at Gratch.
You command the beasts, just as Darkon Rawl did. We cannot command beasts. You even talk to him, Agar.
You don't understand. I saved him when he was a pup. I raised him, that's all. We became friends. It's not magic.
Haley clapped his shoulder again.
It may not seem magic to you, Lord Rawl, but none of us could do it.
But
we saw you become invisible today,
Kara said. She wasn't laughing anymore.
Are you going to tell us that was not magic?
Well, yes, I guess it was magic, but not in the way you think. You just don't understand,
Kara's eyebrow lifted.
Lord Rawl, to you it is understandable because you have the gift. To us it is magic. Surely you would not suggest that any of us could do it.
Richard wiped a hand across his face.
No, you couldn't do it, but still it's not what you think.
Raina's dark eyes fixed on his with that look that Mordasith flashed when they expected compliance and no argument, a steely gaze that seemed to paralyze his tongue. Though he was no longer the captive of a Mordasith, and these women were trying to help him, the look still gave him pause.
Lord Rawl, she said in a soft voice that filled the quiet room. At the people's palace, You fought the spirit of Darkin Rawl. You, a mere man, fought the spirit of a powerful wizard come back from the underworld, from the world of the dead, to destroy us all. He had no corporeal existence. He was a spirit, animate only through magic. You could only battle such a demon with magic of your own. During the battle, you sent lightning, driven by magic, racing through the palace to destroy the rebel leaders who opposed you and wished Darkin Rawl to triumph. Everyone at the palace, not bonded to you already, became so that day. None of us, in our whole lives, has ever seen the like of the magic crackling through the palace that day. She leaned toward him, still gripping him in her dark gaze, the passion in her voice cutting through the stillness. That was magic, Lord Rawl. We were all about to be destroyed, to be swallowed into the world of the dead. You saved us. You kept your part of the covenant. You were the magic against magic. You are the Master Rawl. We would lay down our lives for you.
Richard realized that his left hand was tightly gripping the hilt of his sword. He could feel the raised gold letters of the word truth biting into his flesh. He managed to disengage himself from Reyna's gaze to take in the rest of them.
All you say is true. But it's not so simple as you believe. There's more to it. I don't want you to think I was able to do the things I did because I knew how. It just happened. Darkin Rawl studied his whole life to be a wizard, to use magic. I know almost nothing about it. You place too much faith in me.
Kara shrugged.
We understand. You have more to learn about magic. This is good. It is always good to learn more. You will serve us better as you learn more.
No, you don't understand. She placed a reassuring hand on his shoulder.
No matter how much you know, there will always be more. No one knows everything. This does not change anything. You are the Master Rawl. We are bonded to you.
She squeezed his shoulder. Even if any of us wanted to change it, we could not. Suddenly, Richard felt calm. He didn't really want to talk them out of this. He could use their help, their loyalty.
You've helped me before, maybe even saved my neck out there in the street. But I just don't want you to have more faith in me than is justified. I don't want to deceive you. I want you to follow me because what we do is right, not because of a bond forged with magic. That's slavery.
Lord Rawl, Reyna said, her voice unsteady for the first time.
We were bonded to Darkin Rawl. We had no more choice in that than we do now. He took us from our homes when we were young, trained us, and used us to...
Richard stood, putting his fingertips to her lips.
I know. It's all right. You're free now.
Kara gripped his shirt and drew his face close to hers.
Don't you see? Even though many of us hated Darkin Rawl, we were compelled to serve. We were bonded. That was slavery. If you don't know everything, that's not important to us. We are bonded to you as the Master Rawl, regardless. For the first time in any of our lives, it is not a burden. If the bond were not there, we would choose to do the same. That is not slavery.
We don't know anything about your magic, Haley said. But we can help you learn what it means to be Lord Rawl.
The irony of her spreading smile softened her blue eyes, letting the women behind the appellation of Mord Sith show through.
It is, after all, the purpose of Mord Sith to train, to teach.
The smile faded as her expression turned serious.
It doesn't matter to us if you have more steps in the journey. We won't abandon you for it.
Richard raked his fingers through his hair. He was touched by the things they said, but their blind devotion somehow troubled him.
As long as you understand that I'm not the wizard you thought. I know a little about some magic, like my sword, but I don't know much about using my gift. I used what came forth from within me without understanding it or being able to control it, and the good spirits helped me.
He paused a moment as he looked into the depths of their waiting eyes.
Denna is with them.
The four women smiled, each in her own private way. They had known Denna, known that she had trained him and that he had killed her in order to escape. In so doing, he freed her of her bond to Darkin Rawl and what she had become, but at a cost that would always haunt him, even if her spirit was now at peace. He had had to turn the Sword of Truth white and end her life with that side of the magic, through its love and forgiveness.
What could be better than having the good spirits on our side?
Kara said in a quiet tone that seemed to speak for them all.
It's good to know that Denna is with them.
Richard turned away from their eyes in an effort to also turn away from his haunting memories. He brushed the dust off his pants and changed the subject.
Well, as the Seeker of Truth, I was on my way to see whoever is in charge of the Daharans here in Aidendrill. I have something important to do, and I need to hurry.
I didn't know anything about this bond, but I do know about being Seeker. I guess it can't hurt to have all of you along. Berdine shook her head of wavy brown hair.
It's fortunate we found him in time,
the other three muttered their agreement. Richard looked from one face to another. Why is it fortunate?
Because, Kara said, they don't yet know you as the Master Rawl.
I told you, I'm the Seeker. That's more important than being the Master Rawl. Don't forget, as the Seeker, I killed the last Master Rawl. But now that you've told me about this bond, I intend to tell the Daharan Command that I'm also the new Lord Rawl and demand their allegiance. It will certainly make what I have planned easier. Berdine barked a laugh.
We had no idea how lucky we were to catch you in time.
Raina brushed her dark bangs back as she glanced to her sister of the Ajeel.
I shudder to think how close we came to losing him.
What are you talking about? They're Daharans. I thought they would be able to sense me with this bond thing.
We told you, Ulic said. First, we must recognize and accept the Master Rawl's rule in a formal manner. You have not done that with these men. Also, the bond isn't the same in all of us.
Richard threw his hands up.
First you tell me that they will follow me, and now you tell me they won't?
You have to bond them to you, Lord Rawl, Kara said.
She sighed.
If you can. General Rybish's blood isn't pure.
Richard frowned.
What does that mean?
Lord Rawl, Egan said as he came forward.
In the beginning times, when the first Master Rawl cast the web, bonding us, Dahara was not as it is today. Dahara was a land within a larger land, much the same as the Midlands are made up of different lands.
Richard suddenly remembered the story Kaelin told him the night he met her. As they had sat shivering by a fire in the shelter of a wayward pine, after they had had the wits frightened out of them by an encounter with a Gar, she had told him some of the history of the world beyond his home of Westland. Richard stared off into a dark corner as he recalled the story.
Darkin Rawl's grandfather, Panis, the master of Dahara, set about joining all the lands together under his rule. He swallowed up all the lands, all the kingdoms, making it one, making it all Dahara.
That's right, Egan said. Not all the people who now call themselves Daharan are descendants of the first Daharans. Those who were bonded. Some have a bit of true Daharan blood, some have more, and in some, like Ulic and I, it is pure. Some have no true Daharan blood, they do not feel the bond. Darkin Rawl and his father before him gathered those to him who were of like mind, those who lusted for power. Many of those Daharans were not pure of blood, but pure of ambition.
Commander General Trimac at the palace, and the men of the first file,
Richard gestured to Ulic and Egan.
And Master Rawl's personal bodyguards must be pure Daharan?
Ulic nodded.
Darkin Rawl, like his father before him, would trust none but those of pure blood to guard him. Used those of mixed blood, or those without the bond at all, to fight the wars away from the heart of Dahara and to conquer other lands.
Richard stroked his lower lip with a finger as he thought.
What of the man in charge of the Daharan troops here in Aedendrill? What's his name?
General Rybish, Berdine said. He is of mixed blood, and so it will not be as easy. But if you can make him recognize you as the Master Rawl, he has enough Daharan blood to be bonded. When a commander is bonded, many of his men become so at the same time, because they trust in their commanders. They will believe as he. If you can bond General Rybish, then you will have control of the forces in Aedendrill. Even though some of the men have no true Daharan blood, they are loyal to their leaders, and will still be bonded in a manner of speaking.
Then I've got to do something to convince this General Rybish that I'm the new Master Rawl.
Kara grinned wickedly.
That's why you need us. We've brought you something from Commander General Trimac.
She gestured to Haley.
Show him.
Haley unfastened the top buttons of her leather outfit and pulled a long pouch from between her breasts. With a proud smile, she handed it to Richard. He extracted the scroll inside, inspecting the symbol of a skull with crossed swords under it impressed into the gold-colored wax.
What's this?
Commander General Trimac wanted to help you, Haley said.
With the gleam of a smile still in her eyes, she put a finger to the wax.
This is the personal seal of the Commander General of the First File. The document is in his own hand. He wrote it while I stood waiting, and then told me to give it to you. It declares you to be the new Master Rawl, and says that the First File and all the troops and field generals in Dahara recognize you as such, are bonded, and stand ready to defend your ascension to power with their lives. It threatens undying vengeance against any who stand against you.
Richard's gaze rose to her blue eyes.
Haley, I could kiss you.
Her smile vanished in an instant.
Lord Rawl, you have declared us free,
We no longer have to submit. She snapped her mouth closed as her face went scarlet, as did the other women's. Haley bowed her head and fixed her sight on the floor. Her voice came in a submissive whisper.
Forgive me, Lord Rawl. If you wish that of us, we of course offer ourselves willingly.
With his fingertips, Richard lifted her chin.
Haley, it was just a figure of speech.
As you told me, though you are bonded, this time you are not slaves. I am not just the Master Rawl, I am also the Seeker of Truth. I hope to have you come to follow me because the cause is just. That is what I wish you to be bound to, not me. You need never fear, I will revoke your freedom.
Haley swallowed. Thank you, Lord Rawl.
Richard waved the scroll. Now, let's go let this General Rybrish meet the new Master Rawl, so I can get on with what I need to do.
Berdine laid a restraining hand to his arm.
Lord Rawl, the words of the Commander-General are meant to be an aid. They in themselves will not bond these troops to you.
Richard put his fists on his hips.
You four have a bad habit of dangling something in front of my face and then snatching it away. What else do I need to do? Some fancy magic?
The four nodded as if he had finally guessed their plan.
What?
Richard leaned toward them.
You mean this general will want me to perform some magic trick to prove myself?
Ill at ease, Kara shrugged.
Lord Rawl, these are just words on paper. They are meant to back you, to be of help, not to perform the task for you.
At the palace in Dahara, the word of the commander-general is law. Only you outrank him. But in the field, it is not so. Here, General Rybish is the law. You must convince him that you outrank him. These men will not be easily won over. The Master Rawl must be seen as a figure of awesome power and strength. They must be overwhelmed in order to invoke the bond, just as the troops at the palace were when you set the walls alive with lightning. As you said, they must believe. To believe, it will take more than words on paper. General Trimack's letter is meant to be part of it, but it can't be all.
Magic, Richard muttered as he slumped down in the rickety chair. He scrubbed his face, trying to think through the haze of fatigue. He was the Seeker, appointed by a wizard, a position of power and responsibility. The Seeker was a law unto himself. He had planned to do this as the Seeker. He could still do it as a Seeker. He knew about being the Seeker. Still, if the Dahirans and Adendril were loyal to him. Through the weariness, one thought was clear. He had to make sure Kaelin was safe. He had to use his head, not just his heart. He couldn't just run off after her, ignoring what was happening, not if he wanted to truly make sure she was safe. He needed to do this. He needed to win over the Dahirans. Richard shot to his feet.
Did you bring your red leather outfits?
Amord Sith's blood-red leather clothes were worn when they were of a mind to dispense discipline. Red didn't show blood. When Amord Sith wore her red leather, it was a statement that she expected there to be a lot of blood, and everyone knew it wasn't going to be hers. Haley smiled a sly smile as she folded her arms over her breasts.
Amord Sith goes nowhere without her red outfit.
Kara batted her eyes expectantly.
You have thought of something, Lord Rawl?
Yes, Richard gave her a smooth smile.
They need to see power and strength. They want a show of awesome magic. We'll give them magic. We'll overwhelm them.
He held up a cautious finger.
But you must do as I say. I don't want anyone hurt. I didn't free you just to have you get killed.
Haley fixed him with an iron gaze.
Mord Sith do not die in bed, old and toothless.
In those blue eyes, Richard saw a shadow of the madness that had twisted these women into remorseless weapons. He had endured some of what had been done to them. He knew what it was to live with that madness. He held her gaze and, with a soft voice, sought to soften the iron he saw.
If you get yourselves killed, Haley, then who will protect me? If we must lay down our lives, then we do. Otherwise, there will be no Lord Rawl to protect.
An unexpected smile softened Haley's eyes, bringing a little light to the shadows.
We want Lord Rawl to die in bed, old and toothless. What are we to do?
A shadow of doubt passed across his thoughts. Was his ambition twisted by that same madness?
No, he had no choice. This would save lives, not cost them.
You four put on your red leather. We'll wait outside while you change. When you're done, I'll explain.
Haley snatched his shirt as he turned to leave.
Now that we have found you, we're not letting you out of our sight. You will remain here while we change. You may turn your back if you wish.
With a sigh, Richard turned his back and folded his arms. The two men stood watching. Richard frowned and motioned for them to turn around too. Gratch tilted his head with a puzzled look. Shrugging, he turned his back, mimicking Richard.
We're glad you have decided to bond these men to you, Lord Rawl, Kara said.
He could hear them pulling things out of their packs.
You will be much safer with a whole army protecting you. After you have bonded them, we will all leave at once for Dahara, where you will be safe.
We're not going to Dahara, Richard said over his shoulder. I have important matters that must be attended to. I have plans.
Plans, Lord Rawl?
He could almost feel Raina's breath on the back of his neck as she peeled off her brown leather.
What plans?
What kind of plans would the Master Rawl have? I plan to conquer the world.
Chapter 9. There was no need to force their way through the crowds. They drove a wave of panic before them, the way the sight of wolves drove a herd of sheep. People screamed as they scattered. Mothers gathered up children in their arms while running. Men fell face first into the snow as they scrambled to get away. Peddlers abandoned their wares in a mad dash for their lives, and shop doors to each side slammed shut. The panic, Richard thought, was a good sign. At least they wouldn't be ignored. Of course, it was hard to ignore a 7-foot gar walking through a city in broad daylight. Richard suspected that Gratch was having the time of his life, not sharing his innocent view of the task at hand. The rest of them wore grim expressions as they marched down the center of the street. Gratch walked behind Richard, Ulic and Egan in front, Kara and Berdine at his left, and Haley and Raina to the right. It was no chance order. Ulic and Egan had insisted that they were to be to each side, as they were Lord Rawl's bodyguards. The women didn't think much of that idea, and argued that they would be the last line of defense around Lord Rawl. Gratch hadn't cared where he walked as long as he was close to Richard. Richard had had to raise his voice to bring a halt to the argument. He had told them that Ulic and Egan would be in front to clear the way if need be. The Mord Sith would protect each side, and Gratch would be at his back, since the Gar could see over them all. Everyone had seemed satisfied, thinking they had received the stations that would prove the best protection for Lord Rawl. Ulic and Egan's capes were pushed back over their shoulders, bearing the bands with sharpened projections worn above their elbows, but they carried their swords sheathed at their belts. The four women, covered from neck to toes in closely tailored blood-red leather, displaying the yellow star and crescent of the Mord Sith at their stomachs, carried their agile in fists swathed with armor-backed red leather gloves. Richard knew all too well the pain it caused to hold an agile, just as the agile Denna had trained him with and had given him hurt whenever he held it. It was not possible for these women to hold their own agile without its magic causing them pain. The pain, Richard knew, was excruciating, but Mord Sith were trained to endure pain, and they stubbornly prided themselves in their ability to tolerate it. Richard had tried to convince them to give up their agile, but they would not. He could order it, he supposed, but to do so would be to withdraw the freedom he had granted them, and he was loath to do that. If they were to give up their agile, it was for them to do. Somehow he didn't think they would. Having carried the Sword of Truth as long as he had, Richard could understand how wishes could be at variance with principles. He hated the sword and wanted to be rid of it, of the things he did with it, of what it did to him, but at every turn he had fought to keep it. A good 50 or 60 troops milled about outside the square two-story building occupied by the Daharan command. Only 6 up on the entrance landing appeared to be formally posted. Without slowing, Richard and his small company cut a straight line through the knot of men and toward the steps. The men all stumbled back out of the way, shock registering on their faces as they took in the odd sight. They didn't panic the way the people in the market had, but most moved back to make way. Glares from the 4 women moved the rest back as efficiently as bared steel. Some of the men gripped the hilts of their swords as they took a few steps in retreat.
"Make way for Lord Rawl!" Ulic called out.
In disorder, the soldiers stumbled back farther. Confused but not willing to take a chance, a few bowed. In a private cocoon of concentration, Richard watched it all from under the hood of his Mriss-Width cape. Before anyone had the presence of mind to stop or question them, they were through the crowd of soldiers and climbing the dozen steps to the simple iron-bound door. At the top, one of the guards, a man about Richard's size, decided he wasn't sure they should be allowed in. He stepped in front of the door.
"You will wait."
"Make way for Lord Rawl, you fool,"
Egan growled without slowing, the guard's eyes fixed on the armbands.
"What?"
Still not slowing, Egan backhanded the man, knocking him aside. The guard toppled off the landing. 2 of the others jumped off to get out of the way, and the other 3 opened the door, backing through. Richard winced. He had told them all, even Gratch, that he didn't want anyone hurt unless it was necessary. He worried about what each of them might imagine was necessary. Inside, soldiers, having heard the commotion outside, rushed toward them from halls dimly lit with a few lamps. Seeing Ulic and Egan and the gold bands above their elbows, they didn't draw weapons, but they didn't look to be far from doing so. A menacing growl from Gratch slowed them. The sight of the Mord Sith in their red leather stopped them.
General Rybish, was all Ulic said.
A few of the men moved forward.
Lord Rawl to see General Rybish, Egan said with quiet authority. Where is he?
Suspicious, the men stared but didn't speak. A husky officer on the right, fists on his hips and a glare on his pockmarked face, pushed through his men.
What's this about?
He took an aggressive step forward, one too many, and lifted a threatening finger toward them. In a blink, Reyna had her Ajeel on his shoulder, dropping him to his knees. She canted it up, pressing the tip into the nerve at the side of his neck. His shriek echoed through the halls. The rest of the men flinched back.
You answer questions, Reyna said, in the unmistakable smoldering tone of a Mord Sith in complete control. You don't ask them.
The man's whole body convulsed as he screamed. Reyna leaned toward him, her red leather creaking.
I grant you but one more chance. Where is General Rybish?
His arm jerked up, waggling uncontrollably, but still managing to point in the general direction of the central of three halls.
Door! End hall!
Reyna withdrew her Ajeel.
Thank you.
The man collapsed like a puppet whose strings had been cut. Richard didn't spare any of his concentration to wince in sympathy. As much pain as an Ajeel could give, Reyna hadn't used it to kill. He would recover, but the other men stared wide-eyed as he writhed in the lingering agony.
Bow to the Master Rawl, she hissed. All of you.
Master Rawl?
One panicked voice asked. Haley lifted a hand toward Richard.
Master Rawl!
The men stared in consternation. Reyna snapped her fingers and pointed at the floor. They dropped to their knees. Before they had time to think, Richard and his company were off down the hall, their boot strikes on the wide planked wood floor reverberating off the walls. Some of the men drawing swords followed. At the end of the hall, Ulic flung open the door to a large high-ceilinged room that had been stripped of decoration. Here and there, hints of the former blue color scheme showed through the utilitarian whitewash. Gratch, bringing up the rear, had to bend to fit through the doorway. Richard ignored the worry in his gut that they were sliding down into a viper pit. Inside the room, they were greeted by three formidable ranks of Dharan soldiers, all with battle axes or swords to hand. It was a solid wall of grim faces, muscle, and steel. Behind the soldiers was a long table before a wall of unadorned windows looking out on a snowy courtyard. Above the far courtyard wall, Richard could see the spires of the Confessor's Palace, and above it, on the mountain, the Wizard's Keep. A row of austere-looking men sat behind the table watching the intruders. On their upper arms, partially veiled by sleeves of chainmail, were neat scars that Richard presumed denoted rank. The row of men certainly had the demeanor of officers. Their eyes shined with confidence and indignation. The man in the center tipped his chair back and folded his muscular arms, arms with more scars than the others. His curly, rust-colored beard covered part of an old white scar that ran from his left temple to his jaw. His heavy eyebrows drew down with displeasure. Haley glared at the soldiers.
We are here to see General Rybish. Move out of our way or be moved.
The captain of the guards reached for her.
You will.
Haley clouded the side of his skull with an armor-backed glove. Egan swept his elbow up to slash the captain's shoulder. In mid-recoil, Egan snatched the captain by the hair, bent his neck back over a knee, and gripped his windpipe.
If you wish to die, speak.
The captain pressed his lips together so hard they turned white. Angry curses rose from the other men as they pressed forward. Ajeel rose in warning.
Let them through, the bearded man behind the table said.
The men moved back, allowing only enough room for them to squeeze through. The women to each side brandished their Ajeel, and the soldiers yielded more room. Egan dropped the captain. He knelt on his good arm and knees as he coughed and gasped for his breath. Behind, the doorway and hall beyond filled with more men, all armed. The man with the rust-colored beard let the front legs of his chair thump down. He folded his hands atop a scattering of papers between stacks laid out neatly to each side.
What's your business?
Haley stepped forward between Ulic and Egan.
You are General Rybish?
The bearded man nodded. Haley inclined her head to him. It was a slight bow. Richard had never seen a Mord Sith grant more, even to a queen.
We bring a message from Commander General Trimic of the First File. Dharkan Rawl is dead, and his spirit has been banished to the underworld by the new Master Rawl.
He lifted an eyebrow.
Is that so?
She drew the scroll from its pouch and handed it to him. He inspected the seal briefly before breaking it with a thumb. He tipped his chair back once more while he unfurled the letter. and his grayish-green eyes flicked from side to side as he read. At last he let the chair thump down again.
"And it took all of you to bring me a message?"
Haley planted her armored knuckles on the table and leaned toward him.
"We bring you not only the message, General Rybish. We also bring you Lord Rawl."
"Is that so? And where is this Lord Rawl of yours?"
Haley flashed her best, moored Sith expression, looking as if she didn't expect to be asked again.
"He stands before you now."
Rybish glanced past her to the company of strangers, his eyes momentarily taking in the gar. Haley straightened, holding her arm out toward Richard.
"May I present Lord Rawl, the master of Dahara and all its people?"
Men whispered, passing her words back to those in the hall. Puzzled, General Rybish gestured toward the women.
"One of you is claiming to be Lord Rawl?"
"Don't be a fool," Kara said.
She held a hand out toward Richard.
"This is Lord Rawl."
The general's brow drew together in a scowl.
"I don't know what kind of game this is, but my patience is just about—"
Richard pushed back the hood of his Mriss-width cape and let his concentration relax. Before the eyes of the general and all his men, Richard appeared to materialize out of the air. Soldiers all around gasped. Some fell back, some dropped to their knees in deep bows.
"I," Richard said in a quiet voice, "am Lord Rawl."
There was a moment of dead silence, and then General Rybish burst into laughter as he slapped a hand to the table. He threw his head back and roared. Some of the men snickered with him, but by the way their eyes moved, it was clear they didn't know why they were joining in, only that they thought it best they did. His laughter dying out, General Rybish rose to his feet.
"Quite a trick, young man. But I've seen a lot of tricks since I've been stationed in Adendril. Why, I one day had a man entertain me by having birds fly out of his trousers."
The scowl returned.
"For a moment, I almost believed you. But a trick doesn't make you Lord Rawl. Maybe in Trimac's eyes, but not in mine. I don't bow down to street-corner magicians."
Richard stood stone still, the focus of all eyes, while he frantically tried to think of what to do next. He hadn't expected laughter. He couldn't think of any other magic he could use, and this man didn't seem to know real magic from a trick anyway. Unable to come up with a better idea at the moment, Richard sought to at least make his voice sound confident.
"I am Richard Rawl, son of Darkin Rawl. He is dead. I am now Lord Rawl. If you wish to continue to serve in your post, you will bow down and recognize me. If not, then I will replace you."
Chuckling once more, General Rybish hooked a thumb behind his belt.
"Perform another trick, and if I judge it worthy, I'll give you and your troop a coin before I send you on your way. I'm inclined to give you one for your temerity, if nothing else."
The soldiers moved closer, the mood shifting with them to an edge of menace.
"Lord Rawl does not do tricks,"
Haley snapped. Rybish put his meaty hands on the table as he leaned toward her.
"Your outfits are quite convincing, but you shouldn't play at being a Mord Sith, young lady. If one of them ever got her hands on you, she would not take kindly to your pretense. They take their profession seriously."
Haley drove her Ajeel down on his hand. With a shriek, General Rybish leapt back, his face a picture of shock. He pulled a knife. Gratch's growl rattled the window panes. His green eyes glowed as he bared his fangs. His wings spread with a snap like sails in a gale. Men backed away, cocking arms, holding weapons. Inwardly, Richard groaned. Things were rapidly spinning out of control. He wished he had done a better job of thinking this through, but he had been sure that appearing invisible would awe the Daharans into believing. He should have at least given thought to an escape plan. He didn't know how they were going to get out of the building alive. Even if they managed, it might be at great cost. It could be a bloodbath. He didn't want that. He had only started into this Master Rawl business to prevent people from being hurt, not to cause it. Shouts rose around him. Almost before he realized what he was doing, Richard drew his sword. The unique ring of steel filled the room. The sword's magic surged into him, rising to his defense, inundating him with its fury. It was like being hit by a furnace blast that burned to the bone. He knew the feeling well and urged it onward. There was no choice. Storms of rage erupted within. He let the spirits of those who had used the magic before soar with him on the winds of wrath. Rybish slashed the air with his knife.
"Kill the frauds!"
As the general leapt over the table toward Richard, the room suddenly resounded with a peal of thundering noise. Shards of glass filled the air, refracting light in glittering flashes. Richard ducked into a crouch as Gratch bounded over him. Pieces of window mullions spiraled over their heads. Officers behind the table pitched forward, many cut by the glass. Dumbfounded, Richard realized the windows were exploding inward. Blurs of color streaked through the rain of glass. Shadows and light in midair crashed to ground. Startled, through the sword's rage, Richard felt them. Mriswith. They became solid as they hit the floor. The room burst into battle. Richard saw flashes of red, streaks of fur, and sweeping arcs of steel. An officer smashed face first atop the table, blood splashing across papers. Ulick heaved two men back. Egan hurled another two over the table. Richard ignored the tumult around him as he seized the calm center within. The cacophony faded away as he touched cold steel to his forehead, silently beseeching his blade to be true this day. He saw only the Mriswith, felt only them. With every fiber of his being, he wanted nothing else. The closest sprang up, its back to him. With a scream of fury, Richard unleashed the wrath of the Sword of Truth. The tip whistled as it came around. The blade found its mark. The magic had its taste of blood. Headless, the Mriswith collapsed, its three-bladed knives clattering across the floor. Richard whirled to the lizard-like creature at his other side. Haley leapt between them, into his way. Still turning, he used his momentum to shoulder her aside as he swept his sword around, cleaving the second Mriswith before the head of the first had hit the ground. Reeking blood misted the air. Richard spun ahead. In the grip of fury, he was one with the blade, with its spirits, with its magic. He was, as the ancient prophecies in High Daharan had named him, as he had named himself, Fuegrisa Ost Draka, the bringer of death. Anything less would mean his friends' deaths, but he was beyond reasoned thought. He was lost in need. Though the third Mriswith was dark brown, the color of the leather, Richard still picked it out as it darted through the men. With a mighty thrust, he drove his sword home between its shoulder blades. The Mriswith's death howl shuddered in the air. Men froze at the sound, and the room fell silent. Grunting with effort and with rage, Richard heaved the Mriswith aside. The lifeless carcass slid off the blade and across the floor, slamming into a table leg. The leg snapped, and the corner of the table collapsed under a flutter of papers. Teeth gritted, Richard swept his sword back around to the man standing just beyond where the Mriswith had been a moment before. The point halted at his throat, rock steady and dripping blood. The magic raged out of control, craving for more in its hunger to eliminate the threat. The Seeker's deadly glare met General Rybish's eyes. Those eyes saw for the first time who stood before him. The magic dancing in Richard's eyes was unmistakable. To see it was to see the sun, to feel its heat, to know it without question. No one made a sound, but even if they had, Richard wouldn't have heard it. His entire focus was on the man at the point of his sword, at the point of his vengeance. Richard had leapt headlong over the edge of lethal commitment into a cauldron of seething magic, and returning was an agonizing struggle. General Rybish went to his knees and gazed up the length of the blade into Richard's hawk-like glare. His voice filled the ringing silence.
Master Rawl, guide us. Master Rawl, teach us. Master Rawl, protect us. In your light we thrive. In your mercy we are sheltered. In your wisdom we are humbled. We live only to serve. Our lives are yours.
They weren't false words to save his own life. They were the reverent words of a man who had seen something he truly hadn't expected. Richard had chanted those same words countless times at devotions. For 2 hours each morning and afternoon, everyone at the People's Palace in Dahara went to a devotion square when the bell tolled, and, bowing forehead to the ground, chanted those same words. Richard, as commanded, had said those same words the first time he had met Darkin Rawl. Looking down at the general now and hearing those same words, Richard was repulsed, and yet another part of him was relieved at the same time.
Lord Rawl, Rybish whispered, you saved my life. You saved all our lives. Thank you.
Richard knew that if he were to try to use the Sword of Truth against him now, it wouldn't touch his flesh. In his heart, Richard knew this man was no longer a threat or his enemy. The sword, unless he turned it white and used the love and forgiveness of the magic, couldn't harm anyone who was not a threat. The wrath, though, responded not to reason, and denying it, the attempt was agony. Richard finally exerted his dominion over the rage and drove the Sword of Truth into his scabbard, driving back the magic, the anger at the same time. It had ended as swiftly as it had begun. To Richard, it almost seemed an unexpected dream, a twitch of violence, and it was over. Across the sloping tabletop lay a dead officer, his blood running down the incline of polished wood. Glass littered the floor, along with scattered papers and stinking Mriswith blood. The room full of soldiers and those in the hall were on their knees. Their eyes, too, had seen the unequivocal.
"Is everyone else all right?" Richard realized his voice was hoarse from screaming. "Is anyone else hurt?"
Silence echoed in the room. A few of the men were nursing injuries that looked painful but not life-threatening. Ulick and Egan, both panting, both with their swords still in their scabbards, both with bloody knuckles, were standing among the men on their knees. They had been at the People's Palace, their eyes had already seen. Gratch folded his wings and grinned. At least there was one, Richard thought, who was bonded through friendship. Four dead Mriswith lay sprawled on the floor. Gratch had killed one, and Richard three. Fortunately, before they were able to kill anyone else. It could have easily been much worse. Kara drew a hank of hair back from her face, while Berdine brushed glass fragments off her head, and Reyna released her grip on a soldier's arm, letting him slump forward to catch his breath. Richard glanced past a severed torso of a Mriswith on the floor. Haley, her red leather standing out in sharp contrast to her blonde hair, stood stooped with her arms folded across her abdomen. Her Aegil dangled from its chain at her wrist. Her face was ashen. As Richard looked down, a tingle of icy dread flushed across his flesh. Her red leather had hidden what he now saw. She was standing in a pool of blood, her blood. He vaulted the Mriswith and caught her in his arms.
Haley, Richard took up her weight and lowered her to the floor. Dear spirits, what happened?
Before the words were out of his mouth, he knew. That was the way Mriswith killed. The other three women were there, kneeling behind him as he put her head in his lap. Gratch squatted beside him, her blue eyes fixed on his.
Lord Rawl.
Oh, Haley, I'm so sorry, I should never have let you.
No, listen, I was foolishly distracted, and he was quick. But still, as he slashed me, I captured his magic for an instant. Before you killed him, it was mine.
If magic was used against them, Mord Sith could take control of it, leaving an opponent helpless. That was how Denna had captured him.
Haley, I'm so sorry I wasn't fast enough. It was the gift.
What?
His magic was as yours. The gift.
His hand stroked her cold brow, forcing him to keep his eyes on hers and not look down.
The gift. Thank you for the warning, Haley. I'm in your debt.
She gripped his shirt with a bloody hand.
Thank you, Lord Rawl, for my freedom.
She struggled to take a shallow breath.
As brief as it was worth the price.
She looked to her sisters of the Aegil.
Protect him.
With a sickening wheeze, the air left her lungs for the last time. Her sightless eyes stared up at him. Richard drew her limp body to himself as he wept, a despairing response at being powerless to undo what had happened. Gratch put a claw tenderly to her back, and Kara a hand to his.
I didn't want any of you to die, dear spirits, I didn't.
Reyna squeezed his shoulder.
We know, Lord Rawl. That is why we must protect you.
Richard gently laid Haley to the floor, bending over her, not wanting the others to see the ghastly wound she had taken. A searching glance revealed a Mriswith cape close by. He turned to a nearby soldier instead.
Give me your cloak.
The man yanked his cloak off as if it were on fire. Richard closed Haley's eyes and then covered her with the cloak as he fought back the urge to be sick.
We'll give her a proper Dharan funeral, Lord Rawl.
General Rybish, standing beside him, gestured toward the table.
Along with Edwards.
Richard squeezed his eyes closed and said a prayer to the good spirits to watch over Haley's spirit, and then he stood.
After the devotion,
the general squinted one eye.
Lord Rawl? She fought for me. She died trying to protect me. Before she's put to rest, I want her spirit to see that it was to a purpose. This afternoon, after the devotion, Haley and your man will be put to rest.
Kara leaned close and whispered,
Lord Rawl, full devotions are done in Dahara, but not in the field. In the field, one reflection, as General Rybish has done, is customary.
General Rybish nodded apologetically. Richard's gaze swept the room. All eyes were on him. Beyond the faces, splashes of Mriswith blood stained the whitewash. He brought his steely gaze back to the general.
I don't care what you have done in the past. This day there will be a full devotion here, in Aedendril. Tomorrow, you may go back to the custom. Today, all Daharans in and around the city will do a full devotion.
The general's fingers fidgeted at his beard.
Lord Rawl, there are a great many troops in the area. They must all be notified, and I'm not interested in excuses, General Rybish. A difficult path lies ahead. If you cannot accomplish this task, then do not expect me to have faith that you can accomplish the rest.
General Rybish cast a quick look over his shoulder at the officers, as if to say he was about to give his word and commit them to it as well. He turned back to Richard and clapped a fist over his heart.
On my word as a soldier in the service of Dahara, the steel against steel, it will be as Lord Rawl commands. This afternoon, all Daharans will be honored to do a full devotion to the new Master Rawl.
The general glanced at the Mriswith under the corner of the table.
I've never heard of a Master Rawl fighting steel against steel beside his men. It was as if the spirits themselves guided your hand. He cleared his throat. If I may, Lord Rawl, may I ask what difficult path it is that lies ahead?
Richard studied the man's scarred face.
I am a war wizard. I fight with everything I have, magic and steel. And my question, Lord Rawl?
I just answered your question, General Rybish. A slight smile tightened the corner of the general's mouth. Involuntarily, Richard glanced down at Haley. The cloak couldn't cover everything that had been rent from her. Kaelin would have even less of a chance against Imriswith. Again, he thought he might be sick.
Know that she died in the way she wished, Lord Rawl,
Kara said in soft condolence.
As Mordsith.
In his mind's eye, he tried to picture the smile he had known for only a few hours. He could not. His mind would show him only the horrific wound he had seen for but a few seconds. Richard tightened his fists against the nausea and turned a glare on the three remaining Mordsith.
By the spirits, I intend to see you all die in bed, toothless and old. Get used to the idea.
Chapter 10 Tobias Brogan knuckled his mustache as he glanced out of the corner of his eye at Lunetta. When she returned the slightest of nods, his mouth twisted with a sour expression. His rare good mood had evaporated. The man was telling the truth. Lunetta didn't make mistakes about this kind of thing, yet Brogan knew it wasn't the truth. He knew better. He redirected his gaze to the man standing before him on the other side of a table long enough to banquet 70 people, and willed a polite smile to his lips.
Thank you. You have been a great help.
The man peered suspiciously at the soldiers in polished armor to each side of him.
That's all you want to know? You have me dragged all the way over here just to ask me what everyone knows? I could have told your men if they would have asked.
Brogan forced himself to hold a smile.
I apologize for the inconvenience. You have been of service to the Creator and to me.
The smile escaped his control.
You may go.
The man didn't miss the look in Brogan's eyes. He bobbed a bow and scurried for the door. Brogan tapped the side of his thumb on the case at his belt and glanced impatiently to Lunetta.
Are you sure?
Lunetta, in her element, returned a serene gaze.
He'd be telling the truth, Lord General, as were the others.
She knew her craft, filthy as it was, and when practicing it was enveloped with a confident air. It annoyed him. He slammed a fist to the table.
It not be the truth.
He could almost see the keeper in her placid eyes as she watched him.
I not say it be the truth, Lord General, only that he be telling what he believes to be the truth.
Tobias harumphed. He knew the truth of that. He hadn't spent his life hunting evil without learning some of its tricks. He knew magic. The quarry was so close he could almost smell it. The late afternoon sun spilled through a slit in the heavy gold drapes, splashing a glowing line of light across a gilded chair leg, the ornate royal blue flowered carpet, and up over the corner of the long, lustrous tabletop. The midday meal had long ago been put in abeyance while he pressed on, and yet he was no further along the path than when he had started. Frustration gnawed in his gut. Galtero usually displayed a talent for bringing in witnesses who could provide proper information, but so far this lot had proved useless. He wondered what Galtero had found out. The city was in turmoil over something, and Tobias Brogan didn't like it when people were in an uproar, unless he and his men were the cause. Turmoil could be a powerful weapon, but he didn't like unknowns. Surely Galtero must have returned long ago. Tobias leaned back in his diamond-tufted leather chair and addressed one of the crimson-caped soldiers guarding the door.
Ettore, is Galtero back yet?
No, Lord General.
Ettore was young and anxious to make his mark against evil, but he was a good man, shrewd, loyal, and not afraid to be ruthless when dealing with the Keeper's own. One day he would be among the best of the Baneling hunters. Tobias knuckled his aching back.
How many more witnesses do we have?
Two, Lord General.
He wound his hand impatiently.
Bring in the next, then.
While Ettore slipped through the door, Tobias squinted past the slash of sunlight to his sister standing against the wall.
You were sure, Lunetta, weren't you?
She stared as she clutched her tattered rags to herself.
Yes, Lord General.
He sighed as the door opened and the guard led in a thin woman who didn't look to be any too happy. Tobias put on his most polite smile. A wise hunter didn't let his quarry catch a glimpse of fangs. The woman jerked her elbow from Ettore's grip.
What's this about? I was taken against my will and have been locked in a room all day. What right have you to take a person against their will?
Tobias smiled apologetically.
There must be some misunderstanding. I am sorry. You see, we only wanted to ask a few questions of people who we judge to be reliable. Why, most of the people on the street wouldn't know up from down. You seemed an intelligent woman, that's all, and she leaned over the table toward him. And so you locked me in a room? Is that what the blood of the foal does to people they judge reliable? From what I hear, the blood doesn't bother with questions. They simply act on rumor, as long as it results in a fresh grave.
Brogan could feel his cheek twitch, but he held the smile.
You hear all, madam. The blood of the fold only be interested in the truth. We serve the Creator and His will, no less than a woman of your character. Now, would you mind answering a few questions, and then we will see you safely home.
See me home now. This is a free city. No palace has the right to drag people in to question them, not in Aiden Drill. I have no obligation to answer any of your questions.
Brogan widened his smile as he forced a small shrug.
Quite right, madam. We've no right at all and didn't mean to imply one. We are only seeking the assistance of honest, humble folk. If you would simply help us get to the bottom of a few simple matters, you could be on your way with our heartfelt appreciation.
She scowled a moment, and then rolled her bony shoulders to straighten her wool shawl.
If it will get me back home, then get on with it. What do you want to know?
Tobias rearranged himself in his chair so as to cover a quick glance at Lunetta to make sure she was paying attention.
You see, madam, the Midlands has been torn asunder by war since spring last, and we seek to know if the Keeper's minions have a hand in the strife now shadowing the lands. Have any of the council members spoken against the Creator?
They're dead.
Yes, I've heard that. But the blood of the fold doesn't put stock in rumor. We must have solid evidence, such as the word of a witness.
Last night I saw their bodies in the council chambers.
Is that so? Well, that is powerful evidence. At last we hear the truth from an honorable person who was a witness. You see, you are already of assistance. Who killed them?
I didn't see the killing done.
Did you ever hear any counselor preach against the Creator's peace?
They railed against the peace of the Midland Alliance, and as far as I'm concerned, that's the same thing, though they didn't put it in those terms. They tried to make it seem as if black were white and white black.
Tobias lifted an eyebrow, trying to act interested.
Those who serve the Keeper use such tactics, trying to make you think doing evil be right. He lifted his hand in a vague gesture. Was there any land in particular that wished to break the peace of the Alliance?
The woman stood with her back straight and stiff as she looked down her nose at him.
They all, including yours, seemed equally ready to cast the world into slavery under the Imperial Order.
Slavery? I have heard that the Imperial Order seeks only to unite the lands and bring man to his rightful place in the world under the guidance of the Creator.
Then you heard wrong. They seek only to hear whatever lie suits their purpose, and their purpose is conquest and domination.
I have not heard that side of it. This be valuable news.
He leaned back in his chair, crossed one leg over the other, and folded his hands in his lap.
And while all this plotting and insurrection was taking place in the council chambers, where was the mother confessor?
She faltered for an instant.
Away on confessor business.
I see. But she did return.
Yes.
And when she came back, did she try to stop this insurrection? Did she try to hold the Midlands together?
The woman's eyes narrowed.
Of course she did. And you know what they did to her for it. Don't pretend you don't.
A casual glance in the direction of the window showed Lunetta's eyes focused on the woman.
Well, I have heard every sort of rumor. If you saw the events with your own eyes, then it would be powerful evidence. Did you witness any of these events, madam?
I saw the mother confessor's execution, if that's what you mean.
Tobias leaned forward on his elbows and steepled his fingers.
Yes, that was what I feared. And she is dead, then.
Her nostrils flared.
Why are you so interested in the details?
Tobias widened his eyes.
Madam, the Midlands has been united under the confessors and a mother confessor for 3,000 years. We have all prospered and had a good deal of peace under Aiden Drill's rule. When the war with Dahara started up after the boundary went down, I feared for the Midlands.
Then why didn't you come to our aid?
Though I wished to lend my aid, the king forbade the blood of the fold from interfering. I objected, of course, but he was, after all, our king. Nicobarisi suffered under his rule. As it turned out, he had darker intentions for our people, and apparently, as you have said,
His counselors were ready to cast us into slavery. Once the king was exposed for what he truly was, a baneling, and paid the price, I at once brought our men across the mountains to Aedendrill to place them at the disposal of the Midlands, the council, and the Mother Confessor. When I arrive, what do I find but Dharan troops everywhere? Yet they are said to no longer be at war with us. I hear the Imperial Order has come to the rescue of the Midlands. On my journey and since my arrival, I have heard all sorts of rumors. That the Midlands has fallen, that the Midlands is rallying, that the counselors are dead, that they are alive and in hiding, that the Keltans seize control of the Midlands, that the Dharans have, that the Imperial Order has, that the Confessors are all dead, that the Wizards are all dead, that the Mother Confessor is dead, that all of them are alive. What am I to believe? If the Mother Confessor were alive, we could help her, protect her. We are a poor land, but we wish to be of aid to the Midlands, if we can. Her shoulders relaxed a bit. Some of what you've heard is true. In the war with Dahara, all the confessors, except the Mother Confessor, were killed. The wizards died, too. Since then, Darkan Rall died, and the Daharans threw their lot in with the Imperial Order, as did Kelton, among others. The Mother Confessor returned and tried to hold the Midlands together. For her trouble, the seditious pretenders to the council had her executed. He shook his head. This is sad news. I had hoped the rumor's false. We need her. Brogan wet his tongue. You're quite sure she was killed in the execution. Perhaps you're mistaken. She is, after all, a creature of magic. She might have escaped in a confusion of smoke or some such. Perhaps she still lives. The woman fixed a glare on him. The Mother Confessor is dead. But I have heard rumors that she was seen alive across the Kern River. Idle rumors of fools. She is dead. I myself saw her beheaded. Brogan stroked a finger across the smooth scar at the side of his mouth as he watched the woman. I also heard a report that she had fled in the other direction, to the southwest. Surely there is hope. Not true. I will say it for the last time. I saw her beheaded. She did not escape. The Mother Confessor is dead. If you wish to be of aid to the Midlands, then you will do what you can to join the Midlands together once more. Tobias studied her grim face for a moment. Yes, yes, you're quite right. This is all very troubling news, but it'd be good at last to have a reliable witness to shed light on the truth. I thank you, madam. You have been more help than you can know. I will see what I can do to put my troops to the best advantage.
The best advantage would be to help expunge the Imperial Order from Aedendrill, and then the Midlands.
You think them so wicked?
She lifted her bandaged hands toward him.
They tore off my fingernails to make me speak lies.
How ghastly. And what lies did they wish you to speak?
That black was white and white black, as do the blood?
Brogan smiled, feigning amusement at her wit.
You have been a great help, madam. You are loyal to the Midlands, and for that you have my gratitude. But I am sorry you feel the way you do about the blood of the fold. Perhaps you too shouldn't listen to rumors. They be only that. I don't want to inconvenience you any longer. Good day.
She upbraided him with a fiery scowl before storming off. Under other circumstances, her reluctance to be forthright would have cost her much more than her fingernails. But Brogan had pursued dangerous quarry before, and he knew that discretion now would reward him later. The prize was worth enduring her mocking tone. Even without her cooperation, he had gotten something very valuable from her this day, something she didn't know she had given. And that was his design, that the hunted wouldn't know he had picked up the scent. Tobias allowed himself at last to meet Lunetta's gleaming gaze.
She tells lies, my lord general. She tells mostly the truth to mask them, but she tells lies.
Galtero had indeed brought him a treasure. Tobias leaned forward. He wanted to hear Lunetta say it, to hear her voice his suspicions aloud, to put the confirmation of her talent to it.
Which be lies? Two be lies she guards like the royal treasury.
He smacked his lips.
Which two?
Lunetta smiled a sly smile.
First, she be lying when she said that the Mother Confessor be dead.
Tobias slapped a hand to the table.
I knew it. When she said it, I knew it be a lie.
He closed his eyes and swallowed as he offered a prayer to the Creator.
And the other? She be lying when she said that the Mother Confessor did not flee. She knows that the Mother Confessor be alive, and that she ran to the southwest. All the rest she told be true.
Tobias's good mood was back. He rubbed his hands together, feeling the warmth it brought. The hunter's luck was with him. He had the scent.